President Trump's new plan to prohibit migrants from seeking asylum in the U.S. if they cross the border outside of the designated entry points is likely to face legal challenges. But our next guest says even if it's found to be legal, it's not practical, and she has a plan that is. Sonia Nazario is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author and journalist who's actually journeyed with migrating families. She's best known for Enrique's Journey, her L.A. Times series and book following a Honduran boy's struggle to find his mother in the U.S., as he rode atop trains making their way north. She outlined her plan in a recent New York Times op-ed, warning that parts of it will annoy both liberals and conservatives. And she joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. I have the emails from both sides to prove it. Both are annoyed with me. Yes.
Right, because you laid this out in an op-ed for the New York Times. And before we get to that, we want to just roll back. Many people are very familiar with your story and your phenomenal book, Enrique's Journey. But you yourself are an immigrant. Your father fled Syria because of persecution of Christians there. Your mother fled Poland to escape the oncoming persecution of the Jewish populations. They ended up in Argentina.
Yes, and her family members who stayed in Poland were gassed in Auschwitz.
Yeah, so you are familiar with the urgency
migration. And then we migrated from Argentina to the United States, fleeing control of the universities where my father worked by the military in the 50s. I have a lot of experience in my family with fleeing persecution.
Right, and you say right off the bat, you put this in context, which is that the flow of migrants into the U.S. is, first of all, a quarter of what it was at its height in 2000. And it's not Mexicans with all the pejoratives that many have been using. The majority of them are fleeing violence.
It has radically changed over the last 20 years that I've looked at this. I think actually when I go speak in Alabama and North Carolina and places where people have their hair on fire on this issue, they're reacting to what was happening in the 1990s and the early 2000s when we were seeing 1.6 million people being apprehended at our border every year by Border Patrol. But today it's a quarter of that. Before it was largely single Mexican men. They were economic migrants. And today 53% are coming from three of the most violent countries on earth, El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala. So it's a fundamental shift in who's coming and why they're coming.
They're hearing the rhetoric from President Trump. They know what's going on here, and still they come because it's a choice for many of them, you say, between coming and death.
Right. What I have seen in these neighborhoods in Honduras is that 9, 10, and 11-year-old boys are forcibly conscripted to join gangs. Join or we kill you. Girls who are pretty in neighborhoods are told you're going to be the gang leader's girlfriend or we will exterminate your whole family. Business owners are told you must pay the war tax to the gang. The war tax goes up every month. You reach a point where you can't pay it and they say you pay or you are dead in 24 hours. And the flaw in the president's strategy is that if you're facing someone threatening to kill you in the next 24 hours, you don't think about what you're going to face a month and a half from now, 1,600 miles away at the U.S.-Mexico border. You're thinking about getting out of Dodge and staying alive.
Okay, so you say, here's my proposal. First, address that violence and despair that's pushing migrants out of these three countries. And you point out there are already global organizations that are trying to do that. But the Trump administration isn't supporting them.
There are two groups, one in Honduras, one in Guatemala, that are supported by the UN, by the Organization of American States, that are trying to attack corruption. And they have basically been emasculated by their presidents in the last year or so because they are attacking corruption at the highest levels, including by the presidents of those countries. And the U.S. in the past has strongly supported these organizations, but President Trump has not stood up and said, we will not allow this to happen. We want these organizations to continue to look at this corruption and address this corruption. The president has threatened to cut off aid to governments that don't stop the caravan, as if they could stop these, you know, thousands of people marching north. It's that very aid. In 2014, when we saw a spike in children coming to the United States alone from these countries, the Congress wisely more than doubled foreign aid to these three countries to try to address the root causes. And we funded these violent violence prevention programs. And I went in 2016 to the most violent neighborhood in the murder capital of the world for 4 years in a row, San Pedro Sula, Honduras. We funded outreach centers in that neighborhood where kids could get off the streets and get help getting jobs. We went after the killers in these horrible neighborhoods where in Honduras, 96% of homicides, you can get away with it because no one's going to step forward as a witness. Tomorrow, the gang leaves you dead in the middle of the street. But we worked with witnesses. And 2 or 3 months into building trust, they say, can you testify against this murderer? And they cover you in a black burqa. They put you in a little closet with wheels on it. And under the black burqa, in the little closet with wheels on it, with a one-way mirror, they shove you into the courtroom. And through a voice distorter, you testify. And now more than half of homicides in these horrible neighborhoods are getting guilty verdicts. So in this terrible place, we saw a 62% drop in homicides, cut in half the number of children fleeing north to the United States.
Let's get you to repeat this. This is again in 2014. We saw the huge surge of children coming to the border.
Unaccompanied immigrant minors. Right.
That were escaping this violence you've just described. But after just 2 years, and by the way, the nonprofit that the U.S. helped was the Association for a More Just Society, helping to investigate these murders, getting people into burqas to testify. Incredible. Murders plummeted by 62% over 2 years, and the number of children showing up was cut in half.
That's right. It works. Those pilot programs in Honduras cost $100 million a year, which sounds like a lot of money until you look at what we're spending on migrants when they arrive at our border. We're spending $1.2 billion just for detention shelters to hold immigrant children when they arrive at our border.
Okay, this is the part of your plan that many, especially fiscal conservatives, but many nationalists, which is the word that's being used by our president now, would object to. They don't want the United States. I mean, why should the United States go into neighborhoods and try to reduce murders there? There are murders here.
I mean, I understand that. I have very conservative relatives who say, this is my money. I'm going to spend it in America. I'm not going to spend it anywhere else. Okay, well, you can spend $100 million there or you can spend billions here.
And some liberals object as well because they see it as, you know, meddling. But now you come.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. But now you come to the other part of your plan that really angers some of your liberal readers, because you also point out that you believe very firmly in the rule of law. As somebody who lived in Argentina where it was mutilated, you also believe that if people don't come here the right way, what?
Well, I want to stipulate that compassion means you don't throw people who are seeking safety into these horrible prisons where we are putting them. We should release people with an ankle monitor, with a case manager. The truth is that 96% of asylum seekers show up to their court immigration hearing. Secondly, I think that these people need real due process in that courtroom. They are asking immigration judges to process 700 cases a year. That's impossible. So given those two stipulations, that we have to have a real due process in these courts, and I think especially for children who come here alone, give them a lawyer if they can't afford one. It is a sham to ask a toddler to stand before an immigration judge and expect that toddler, as we do now, to argue their immigration asylum case by themselves. That is a sham.
You're saying treat them fairly, give them a fair trial, but if they do not make it through a fair asylum process, the law is the law and they have to go home.
If you have a judicial process and you apply for asylum and you're allowed to go before that judge, if you lose that case, then you basically, you know, blend into the woodwork and become one of the 11 million people in this country here unlawfully. And I've lived in a country with no laws. You don't want that. I say be much more compassionate on the front end. Don't lock up 9 out of 10 of these asylum seekers as we are now doing. We were releasing 9 out of 10 5 years ago. Now we're locking up 9 out of 10. Give them a fair process in the courtroom. But if you do those two things, and that's a very big if, then I believe that you should direct the resources of ICE on the back end. Go and arrest people who have been denied asylum and deport them. Don't deport the family that's been here 20, 30 years, that has 4 U.S. citizen children, where you're going to, again, separate those kids from their parent. Deport someone who's been here 1 or 2 years and who has lost their asylum case. I don't have a problem doing that. And I don't think liberals can argue for the rule of law in Central America and not promote it within our own borders. Mm-hmm. I think that's hypocritical.
Sonia Nazario, so you have, it sounds like, heard from a lot of people.
Some.
Yeah.
Yes.
What else are people saying besides disagreeing with some part of your plan?
I mean, I think the real concern right now with the president's new executive order, not allowing people to come between ports of entry and apply for asylum. First of all, our laws clearly stipulate that if you are on U.S. soil, you can apply for asylum. So I don't know how this can stand up legally. But what's going to happen until people challenge this legally is that you're going to force more and more people to come to these ports of entry and apply for asylum there. I know of a 43-year-old Mexican woman who showed up with the documents that her brother had been kidnapped. He had been cut to bits. They had left his bits on her patio. They turned her back 5 times without allowing her to apply for asylum. That's illegal. If you hang out for a month or weeks or days, the cartels are waiting for you right there to kidnap you and to torture you and to rape you and to demand ransom from your family members in the United States. We are putting people who have already been traumatized in further danger. We should not be doing that.
That's Sonia Nazario. Sonia, always thought-provoking to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Robin.
Again, her book that she's best known for, Enrique's Journey, and we'll link you to her op-ed, her plan for migrants, at hereandnow.org. Weigh in.